WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Walter Hill directs action films. He directed 48 Hours, in which Eddie Murphy made his movie debut. In his western The Long Riders, Hill directed three sets of Hollywood brothers, the Carradines, the Keaches, and the Quaids. His film Streets of Fire was about a rock star kidnapped by sadistic bikers. Hill's movie The Warriors followed street gangs in New York. Pauline Kael called it a real movie maker's movie. Walter Hill has co-written, directed, and produced one of this summer's big releases. Red Heat, which opens this weekend, is an action comedy that stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Belushi. They play a Soviet cop and an American cop who team up in Chicago, tracking down a Soviet drug dealer who's about to make a big buy. Schwarzenegger's Soviet cop doesn't play by the American rules of justice. He doesn't even know them. In this scene, his gun has just been confiscated by the Chicago police chief, so Belushi offers one of his guns to Schwarzenegger.
All right, I owe you one, because you saved my life tonight. Here. Captain Danko, you are now the proud owner of the most powerful handgun in the world.
Soviet Butterin, 9.2 millimeter. This world's most powerful handgun.
Come on, everyone knows the Magnum 44 is a big boy in the black. Why do you think Dirty Harry uses it?
Who is Dirty Harry?
Walter Hill, welcome to Fresh Air. I wonder if you see your new movie as a companion film to 48 Hours in that the stars are two mismatched guys who are opposites, but they become partners.
Well, I suppose. I keep hearing that it's another version of 48 Hours. I don't know quite what to think about it. Somebody once said that film directors only know two or three stories anyway, and they just keep changing the clothes on the actors and do the same thing again. I suppose the way I think about the comparison is it seems to me that the movie's less like 48 Hours than several other movies have been in the last couple of years. And two, if somebody is going to do, shall we say, an informal remake of 48 Hours, then why the hell not me?
Right. I know that when you were writing the movie, you were thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger for one of the leading roles. Now, it's interesting, it's only in the opening scene that you actually see his body, his muscles. The rest of the time, he's fully clothed, and your camera is really focusing on his face most of the time.
Well, I find Arnold's face really the most remarkable part about this guy. People always, you know, they talk about Arnold's muscles and his body, and it's certainly something and a major part of the iconography, but I don't think that's why Arnold is successful. It's his face. He just doesn't look like anybody else. He looks like some kind of throwback to a medieval warrior, the way you imagine the Greeks looked at the time of the Persian Wars or something. And with the face and with the eyes, he's got a fabulous ability to communicate that goes beyond countries and cultures. I mean, people just love to see him win. It's really a phenomenal capacity that he has. He's not an actor, and he doesn't think of himself that way, you know, as he puts it. You know, he's a star. And finally, stars are, good actors are Lord knows rare, but the rarest thing in films are stars.
Who do you prefer working with as a director, stars or actors?
Well, I don't think you can really say. You'd have to know what
The specifics were. Okay.
Yeah, what the film was and who the actors were.
Some of the early scenes in your new movie, Red Heat, are set.
And some stars are actors, too, so, you know.
Right. Most of the early scenes in your new film, Red Heat, are set in Moscow. How did you get permission to film there?
Well, it was a bit complicated. About 6 months before we started shooting, I submitted a draft of the script to the Ministry of Culture, I think it was, and also Mosfilm. We never received a reply, which I understand is the Soviet way of saying no. They don't like to actually say no, and they like to let it drift off. So I'd rather thought that we'd never get in, and made plans to shoot the Moscow sequence in Budapest. And while in Budapest, towards the end of our film, literally met a guy in a bar. And He said, you guys wanted to shoot in the Soviet Union? And we said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact. And he said, I can fix that. Don't worry. He said, it'll take a little money. And
like a little
didn't
bribing
take too
money.
Much, uh-huh. actually. Uh-huh. And he made a, it's a little complicated. He made an arrangement with a Hungarian television station. This fella makes a living booking rock and roll acts through the Eastern Bloc, you know, English rock and Poland kind of thing. And he made a deal with a Hungarian television station who cut a deal with the Moscow Video Company that was state-run. And as part of their kind of commonwealth, I suppose you'd call it, arrangement, the Comic-Con, the television station arranged a shoot in Moscow, and we were their guests. So it really, we just penetrated the bureaucracy at a different level, I guess is the only way to look at it. And we got our permits. I mean, it wasn't a secret that we were there. And they read the script and made no comment on it one way or the other.
You know, in some ways, this is more of a glasnost than a Cold War film, in that the Americans and the Soviets have a common cause to put drug dealers behind bars. But Schwarzenegger and Belushi, who end up as partners in the movie and trying to track down this this Soviet drug dealer, they participate in a lot of Miranda bashing and, you know, break the hand of one of the prisoners and really disregard reading people their rights and so on. And I was wondering if it's the kind of thing that audiences tend to really cheer on. And I was wondering if that expressed your sentiments at all, or if you just see them as those kinds of cops.
Yeah, there's a couple of people have asked me that question. They seem enormously disappointed that a Russian police officer doesn't actually turn out to be a liberal Democrat. And I am faintly amused by that. The a lot of those scenes are comedic. I think that the intention was to bring this guy in and let him see certain American police procedures, given his own background in a kind of his not understanding American culture and American slang is used for comedic purposes. If you're asking, am I in favor of bashing people around a police station or knocking them out in bars? No, I'm against that.
Okay.
At a self-protective level, first of all, I suppose.
My guest is film director Walter Hill, and his new movie, Red Heat, stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi. It opens this week, and his other films include 48 Hours, The Long Riders, and Streets of Fire. Now, Red Heat and 48 Hours both combine action and comedy. When you're trying to put those two forms together, is the trick to keep the comedy funny and the action, to keep the action serious, in other words?
Well, the trick with comedy is always to keep it funny.
Yes, but, true. It's a hard trick to do.
Yeah, but the audience tells you right away. Action sequences, I don't know that they're secrets. You kind of approach it at a craft level, I suppose, but the jeopardy has to be real, or else... Mm-hmm. There's no thrill to the audience. It's a funny way to make a living. I mean, action films, action directing, because you're dealing with a form, a genre where the ending is foretold. I mean, the audience knows how these films end, and therefore, I mean, Clint gets his man, and Arnold gets his man, and Charlie gets his man, and so that you have to approach it at a craft level of, given a foretold ending, how do you get there, and what moves do you make? I mean, it's like a dance, really, between you and the audience. You both know the steps, and but that doesn't mean there aren't good dancers and bad dancers. I mean, knowing the steps isn't everything about dancing.
Well, I think there's more emphasis in action films now on stunts than there was when you first started making movies. As an action director, do you have to keep up with that and participate in the one-upsmanship of, you know, outdoing the last action film and its stunts?
Well, I think they have been hyped up in the last 15 years. I don't think there's any question about that. I don't know that you have to top everything. The action in this film is not... the kind of thing that nobody's ever seen before, or it's not the biggest action that I've ever done, or certainly there is in a movie that's out there. Now, it's really the question of, does the audience identify enough with the characters to get into their predicament? And the secret of action films isn't the action, it's the characters. I think that's not often perceived, especially, I suppose, with people that write about these things, because they tend not to like the kind of characters that are in action movies, and they tend not to like action heroes. They're not alienated, usually, and they're not conflicted. And to be alienated and conflicted is a rather more fashionable point of view these days.
Did you set out to make action films when you first started making movies?
Oh, yes, yeah. First film was about fist fighting during the Depression, prize fighting during the Depression. And actually, almost every film I've done has been an action film.
What do you love about action movies?
Well, I suppose they kind of keep me in touch with where I was when I was about 17. I always liked action films when I was a kid. I got into this business kind of by accident, and making a living in it has always been a surprise to me. And I really try to make the kind of films that I liked when I was young. And beyond that, I think it's a profession and a craft, and I tend not to really approach it theoretically.
You wrote the screenplay for Sam Peckinpah's film, The Getaway. Were you able to watch him direct, and did you understudy him in any way before directing yourself? You started off as a screenwriter, I should mention that to our listeners, before you started directing. Did you work with him?
I worked with Sam on the script for about 6 months, but when they were filming the picture, I was in England working on something else. So I wasn't really around when they were shooting the picture, but I visited Sam on several sets, and I wouldn't say that I understudied him or anything as formal as that, but...
What did you pick up from him?
What did I pick up from him? Well, he had a unbelievable commitment to his motion pictures. I mean, to a greater degree, I think, than anybody I've ever known. And I think probably more than anything else, he showed me how hard you really have to work and how much you have to give it.
Are action movies more difficult to learn how to direct because they're potentially dangerous scenes to shoot?
Well, you have to be careful because, sure, there's always the possibility of when you're doing something dangerous that somebody can be hurt. I don't know, directors, I think, have an instinct for the kind of thing they do. They do, hopefully, well. And as you make films, you improve your craft. I think I'm a much better director now than when I started 12, 13 years ago.
Your action, I think this is especially true in your earlier movies, like The Warriors, Streets of Fire. The action was very stylized.
Well, that was because we usually didn't have a story.
Are you kidding or serious when you say that?
No, I wish I was.
but they're really great looking. I mean, the streets are just almost neon-like in some of the shots. I mean, the colors, the kind of dark colors that you got in some of the outdoor shooting was
I always thought you could push the things harder than people had been up to then, and I thought you could just, you know, get a little deeper into the and create a beyond reality kind of feeling, and because so much of what you do in action films is rather fantastical, so I wanted to underline that a bit. And it seemed to work.
You also got a sense of toughness as almost an extension of style in something like The Warriors, where all the different gangs and the Warriors had their own kind of haircuts, their own kind of weapons, their own kind of jackets and clothes. And in Streets of Fire, too, I mean, everything was so stylish that Yeah, that toughness became a sense of style. Did you see it that way?
Well, that's a hard one. I mean, obviously, I guess I saw it that way since I did it that way, but the Warriors, I always saw as a fantasy. As a matter of fact, I wanted to, the studio didn't let me do it. I was going to put a card at the start of the film that said, sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they objected strongly and said, you know, that was trying to make it sound like Star Wars, which I didn't really think was the point. But it's the old John Ford line, you know, I've had 1,000 fights with the studios and lost them all. So the picture was very much a fantasy retelling of the Xenophon story of his march to the sea. But I think what got everybody kind of excited, the film had a couple of things in it that I think were fairly disturbing to people. Number one, it started off with a call to anarchism, which was unanswered. And secondly, and I think most importantly, the film accepted the institution of gang and didn't challenge it. It didn't suggest that gangs were terrible or immoral or anything like that. It just simply said they exist.
Yeah, there were no parents in the movie.
Yeah, they exist within this framework, and mm-hmm. Now here is the story. And I think that got a lot of people very disturbed.
Actually, in some theaters, there was like fighting in the theaters, or fighting spilling out into the streets, and that raised the whole question about, you know, if action on the screen creates action in the real world. Did you end up seeing the movie in any of the theaters where there was a skirmish?
No, never did. I don't see my films after I finish with them. Once I ship them, there's nothing more I can do to them. So I think it's just, and I'm the hardest critic on these things. You know, I see all the missed opportunities and things I should have done. And someone once said that films are never completed, simply abandoned. And I think that's correct. You finally run out of time. So once I ship a film, I don't see it.
Okay, well, I want to talk with you more about your movies, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is film director and screenwriter Walter Hill. His new film, Red Heat, stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi. His earlier films include 48 Hours, The Long Riders, and Streets of Fire. We'll talk more after this break. This is Fresh Air. Film director Walter Hill is my guest. I think you really use very intensified sound in your action sequences. When there's a gunshot, you sometimes hear that bullet whistling by. If there's a punch that connects, you really hear it resound. Are you conscious of doing that? Do you think that you intensify the way something looks by intensifying the way it sounds?
Oh, sure, yeah. We work pretty hard on that during the dub, and occasionally I'll put a shot into the surrounds or juice up a certain punch. I mean, it's really very common. I think most directors now do things like that. I try not to overdo it. I think the mistake that quite often happens is when somebody makes all the gunshots loud or all the punches terrifically ferocious, and then it just dulls out. It's just they have equal emphasis, and quite often the projectionist just turns the sound down, and you don't get the effect. So it's really when you choose to give it a jolt is really the question.
There's a sequence toward the end of your film, The Long Riders, which is about the James Gang and several other of the outlaw gangs, the brother gangs. There's a shot where they're riding on their horses and everybody's getting shot at, and it's slow motion. And it's been a long time since I've seen this, but the horses kind of jump through, I think it's a window?
They go through a window, yeah.
Yeah, and all the glass shatters, and the whole scene's done in slow motion. People are getting hit by bullets. I thought it was very brave in a way to do that slow motion, because slow motion can A, be very corny and obvious, or B, end up looking like an homage to the end of Bonnie and Clyde. and I really wonder what...
You know, Peckinpah, you asked me about Sam.
Yeah.
I can remember Well, when I did the Long Riders, and occasionally I use slow motion, and there'll always be somebody that writes something about, well, he's like Sam Peckinpah here, he's using that kind of thing. And as a matter of fact, in the Long Riders, the slow motion is used in quite the opposite way that Sam did it. Sam always used it to heighten reality, and in the Long Riders, it's like a nightmare. It's like a slow motion car wreck or something like that, feeling when you're in a terrible car wreck, God forbid. But Sam, I well remember, because the slow motion technique now is almost always identified with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And, but at the time I was working with him, people used to, they were constantly writing that he had copied, Arthur Penn, and he used to get furious at this, I remember him shouting around the office. And we all know he had copied Kurosawa. It was quite inaccurate.
Have you ever written an action scene that was too hard to actually shoot?
I think, as a matter of fact, most of them you write, you have to modify the staging. You can't find the exact location to pull off the complex stuff, so that you modify them in some way based upon location. Sometimes by finding the location, though, that you could actually make the sequence. You can give it another bend and tape, make it better than it is on the page.
What?
But action sequence, a good action sequence has an idea. You know, it's not stunts. The stunts must complement the idea. The idea of the bus chase at the end, I'm using idea probably in a rather shallow way, but at the end of Red Heat, is not that these are objects of pursuit and escape, but finally they become weapons in the duel between these two rather resourceful Soviets.
Well, let's talk about this bus duel at the end. Schwarzenegger and Belushi are in one bus, and this Soviet drug dealer is in another bus, and they are, it's not a chasing, it's more like a duel. Yeah, you're right. It starts off as a chase. I don't think I'm giving too much away to say that the bus is eventually destruct. When you're dealing with a scene like that, do you have a limited number of takes that you can do? In other words, once the sequence ends and the things are destroyed, is that your final take?
Yeah, you really hang it out there when you go out to do these things. Now, you only get one shot at, for instance, the finale of that. That's it. It either works the way you wanted it to, or you live with what happened. And in this case, it worked out about the way we thought. Oh, the one bus fell quite short of the mark, but the camera operators and the focus pullers were able to compensate. And but it's not an exact science.
Would you like to ban car chases from action movies?
I hear that all the time. As a matter of fact, that's why I think I did this one at the end. No, I think car chases are terrific. I think critics are tired of car chases, you know, but they're tired of movies, and because that's how, you know, it's their job, and everybody has aspects of their job they're tired of, I suppose. And no, a car chase, if it's just a hackneyed, tired car chase, is no good. But if somebody's got some way to do something different and do it interesting and push it a little further and bend it in a direction that's interesting, it's quite legitimate.
I guess I asked it just because it seems like the car chase has gotten to be so predictable and so formulaic. I don't mean yours, but I mean in a lot of action films.
No,
there's a lot
of
formula action films out now.
Yeah, I think that analysis is correct. But I think the answer is not ban car chases. The answer is do better ones.
Mm-hmm. Your movie 48 Hours, I think, totally changed your career. You had been doing movies that, I guess they were pretty successful, but 48 Hours was a real smash in the movies and on home video. And that's raised you to a new level in the film world. Do you want to use that success to make very personal movies, or do you want to use that success to make the biggest movies that you can? And maybe those for you would be the most personal. I guess what I'm asking in a way is once you've had one box office smash, there's pressure to have lots more
I'm happy to hear about this imminence that you're attributing to me. I see myself as an action director out of work currently, but...
Oh, really?
No, you know, these things are expensive. If you work in Hollywood, part of the game is that the people that invest in these movies have the right to have an expectation of a reasonable return. It seems to me that the trick is to work within the conventions of storytelling and make them as personal as you can. But if you're asking, would I rather go to Sweden or Poland and make motion pictures, the answer is no. I like making movies in Hollywood. I like the kinds of stories that Hollywood films tend to be. And I really can't imagine... I can't imagine another way of approaching what I do. I think it's probably best for whatever talent I have.
One last question. When you were young, loving action films and going to see them all the time, did you ever turn your head at any movie because it was too violent for you? Is there anything that ever made you really flinch or turn away from the screen?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember, but they were much tamer in those days. I've seen things since I've been an adult that have made me flinch. You know, things are more graphic now than they were then. No question about it.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us. Thank you.
Sure.
My guest has been film director Walter Hill, and he directed 48 Hours, The Long Riders, Streets of Fire. His new film, Red Heat, opens this Friday. It stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.